Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Delatorre.
Hello everybody, my name is J.C. Delatorre.
And I'm Rita Delatorre.
And this is episode 127 of Transmissions from Atlantis. And we've got another fun-filled episode for you this week. This week, we're talking about...
The Mummy.
The Mummy.
And we're going to talk about...
Are you my mummy?
Don't even start.
I'm my mummy.
Mummy! And... Mummy!
What was that?
What, mummy?
Okay. So we're going to be talking about the fact that, you know, it bombed in the theaters, but should it have bombed?
Yes, not? Is it as bad as everybody makes it out to be? We'll let you know. Also this week, we are talking Doctor Who. We are set up for the big two-part finale. And yes, I've got to admit that I was...
Wrong.
I may have not been correct about the three-parter...
Wrong
thing. What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you trying to pull a Fonz?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know, you can't say that you're wrong.
I don't know that if that word is accurate.
Wrong.
Uh-huh.
I think you're wrong.
Sure.
Wrong.
Right.
Anywho, yeah, so we'll discuss that, as well as preview the two-parter. That's going to be a major, major... two-parter with Dr. Scott Vigay, who's joining us again this week to talk Who.
All right, so we also have quite a few items we're going to be talking of in our rapid fire.
Yep, we're going to be talking a whole bunch of stuff like Carrie Fisher, the Watchmen reboot, and Moffat and Gatiss, the creator of Sherlock and the rebooters of Doctor Who, or part of the rebooters of Doctor Who, have a new project.
Yep.
Hmm.
All right, so let's get started with...
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire!
Fire?
Fire! All right, so starting with rapid fire, let's talk Carrie Fisher. So an autopsy report was released, and you want to know what was in it?
What was in it?
None of your business.
None of our business?
None of our business.
And why do you say that?
Because everybody knows that she's been... you know, struggling with a drug problem and...
pretty much her whole life.
Yes, and mental illnesses, again, through most of her life. It's a struggle that she's always been very honest and very public about. So, it doesn't matter the cause of her death. She was still a badass woman regardless.
And you know what? If the fact of the way she died with what she had in her system changes your view of Carrie Fisher...
then you didn't deserve to know her.
Yes. You aren't really a fan of Carrie Fisher, and you aren't really a fan of Star Wars, and basically, it's none of your damn business.
That's right. So that's our two cents about that.
Yeah. So moving on to a great actor, Daniel Day-Lewis, has decided he's quitting acting.
Which sucks. I mean, he's one of my favorite actors.
I mean, he is a legendary actor. He's been in so many movies, like... I mean, what's one of our favorites? The Last of
Lincoln.
The Yeah, Lincoln, of course. Last of the Mohicans. I mean, so many memorable roles. Gangs of New York. I mean, all these great movies that he's been in. And now he's decided to hang it up.
Well, I mean, actors do that after a while. If they feel that either they're not passionate about the craft anymore, or they feel they've tapped out. You know, maybe he's getting tired and he just doesn't want to act anymore. I mean, we've got actors even much younger than him who quit because they don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, like the kid from Game of Thrones.
Yeah. That played Joffrey.
He
was a one and done because all he's ever been was Game of Thrones. And he quit after that.
I mean, he is one of the most decorated actors that we have out there. I mean, he's won 3 Academy Awards for Best Actor for My Left Foot, There Will Be Blood, and Lincoln. You know, making him the only male actor in history to have 3 wins in the lead actor category. That's remarkable.
Yep.
You know, so it's... I think it's a loss for acting. It's too bad. But you know what? I get it.
Yeah, we get it. And we hope he enjoys his retirement.
Yep. And hopefully he doesn't just disappear kind of like some of the other great actors that have moved on. Kind of like...
Sean Connery.
Yeah, Connery. You don't even see Sean Connery anywhere anymore.
Nah, he became like this recluse.
Yep. So hopefully that's not what Daniel Day-Lewis has planned. But you know what? If that's what he wants to do, more power to him. He's had a great career and, you know, he's left a great legacy for all of us.
Yep. Transformers The Last Night is apparently the worst reviewed movie of the summer. And, well, we weren't planning on going to go watch it anyway because it's Transformers and they suck it.
Yeah, our reaction is, yeah, we could have told you that from the trailer.
It looked horrible, and frankly, the past 3 or 4 Transformer movies have looked horrible, so...
They should have stopped after, like, the second one, I think.
Yeah, because the third one was bad, too.
The third one was bad, the fourth one was bad, the fifth one was... They're all bad, right?
After the first 2 films, it just went...
Yeah. Here's the thing about Bay. You know, if you go into a Bay movie and you expect no plot, a lot of explosions, and you know, just... Silly dialogue, and that's what you're gonna get. And the problem is that Transformers has been so played out at this point that I just think that any more Transformers is just kind of a waste of everybody's time.
Agreed.
Kind of like when Michael Bay decided to reboot Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I haven't even wasted my time to watch that.
I would never watch that because we know what Michael Bay is gonna do to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I've heard a terrible, terrible rumor that he may be the director for any Voltron movie that comes.
No!
It's live
action. No!
Live action Voltron?
No!
No? No?
Oh, man.
If you think that's bad, wait till you hear the rumor that I heard.
What rumor?
That Michael Bay may not want to put Voltron on Eris. He may want to make it Earth-centric.
Okay.
Moving on.
No. Hold up. I know this is rapid fire, but I gotta say this. Michael Bay, if you're listening, don't turn Voltron into another freaking Transformers movie. Do not trash my childhood, okay?
Well, he already did that. He already did that by screwing Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, I wasn't into those two, so he didn't trash my childhood. He might have trashed other people's childhood. But if you do that to Voltron, you are gonna trash mine, and that's gonna be a problem, dude. All right.
Are you making threats?
No. What's next?
Okay, moving on. Watchmen reboot.
I hated the movie, so I'm not interested.
I am interested because I like the comic. I enjoy the Watchmen comics. And I'm looking forward to this because I know for a fact that I'm not going to see a 10-foot penis on IMAX.
Are you sure? Because the Watchmen reboot could take place like on HBO, Stars, or Showtime.
Well, it is going to be on HBO, I believe. And
then what makes you think you're not going to see Big Blue?
Well, I'm... Yes, we might see Blue Penis, but the thing is that it's not going to be 10 foot long like on an IMAX, like when we saw The Watchmen.
Yeah, you weren't expecting that. All of a sudden, transition, big thing staring at you, and you're like, what?
I still have nightmares over that movie, yes. So maybe I won't watch Watchmen, I don't know.
So, if it's anything like the comic and the movie, it's just going to be dark.
Yes, that's what it's supposed to be. I mean, Watchmen is a dark comic, and it's a dark show, so I mean, we'll see what happens.
All right, Supernatural spinoff.
Yes, so apparently, thankfully they did away with the idea of the stupid one that was in Chicago that they had the backdoor pilot for, I think in season 13?
Yeah.
One of the seasons.
It was horrible.
They all run together after a while.
But this one is going to be interesting because this one takes involves Sheriff
Jody Mills. Yeah, Jody Mills. It's going to be surrounding Jody Mills and her two adopted kids and a whole bunch of young girls that are
going to be badasses
and basically be hunters in the supernatural universe.
Yeah, and that I'm interested in.
It sounds kind of cool to me. I don't know.
Yeah,
and you know, Jody Mills has always been one of our favorite characters. So
I've always loved Jody.
Yeah.
Alright, so latest Twin Peaks episode, we finally saw a hint of Coop.
Yes. He had a Coop-type reaction to a stressful incident where somebody was trying to murder him, and he basically took that person out, but then he went back to being Dougie Coop.
Yes, but this episode was much better than the last few we've had because we've actually had a little bit more momentum involved.
Yeah, and you also think of it, we finally meet Diane. I mean, fully, because we kind of had a preview of Diane the last episode, but now we actually truly meet her, and obviously something bad happened to her between her and Cooper.
Well, the bad Cooper.
Do we know it's the bad Cooper?
Yes.
We're assuming it's the bad Cooper, but we know something bad happened between Coop and Diane, and Diane doesn't like Coop too much.
No, but I also think, based on her reactions, that she doesn't believe that he is who they think he is.
Yep, he doesn't have the heart of Agent Cooper, so...
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be interesting. We'll see what happens with that.
So, not to mention the missing pages of Laura Palmer's diary is also giving a little insight into what's going on with Coop, so hopefully the Twin Peaks characters are going to get a little bit more... involved now, which is great because, you know what, the last few episodes have dealt outside of Twin Peaks so much, but this time we actually had a little bit more Twin Peaks action.
Alright, last thing on Rapid Fire. The creators of Sherlock and also the current runners of Doctor Who, Moffat and Gatiss, are going to be doing a Dracula TV show.
So this should be really cool. Is it going to be a period show? Is it going to take place during modern times?
It sounds like they're going to do a Sherlock kind of spin on it, where it's Dracula in modern times.
Which would be cool.
Yes.
Especially if Benedict Cumberbatch is in it.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think that maybe it'll be interesting to where they adapt the Dracula stories into a modern world.
And they were very successful doing that with Sherlock, so...
Yep, it should be interesting.
All right.
All right, so coming up next, we're going to talk...
The Mummy.
Are you my mummy?
No, shut up.
Mummy!
Shut up.
Mummy!
Are you my mummy?
No?
No.
All right. Hey, Rita.
What up?
Where in the world can we get Manos the Hands of Fate?
Well, it's a good thing you asked. You can go to our Transmissions from Atlantis store at the ESO Network store.
We have an ESO Network store?
Yes, we do.
How about that?
Awesome!
What else can you get in there?
Everything. We've got Doctor Who. We've got Wool by Hugh Howey. We've got books by you.
Hey, now that's class.
And not to mention, you can even pick up the Walking Dead omnibus volumes.
And how do people get this?
Well... all you gotta do is go to astore.amazon.com or Station 1.
Alrighty then, I'm on my way. All right, folks, so next up we're talking about The Mummy.
And we're not talking about Brendan Fraser's Mummy.
We're talking about the Tom Cruise film that has been just critically torn apart and has basically bombed at the box office. And
you have the production company blaming Tom Cruise now.
Yep.
For the failure of the film. And,
you know, I mean, I'll be quite honest with you. We went to see it with pretty low expectations after seeing about hearing everybody say how terrible it was and all the other stuff. And I'll be honest with you. I actually like the movie. I didn't think it was a bad movie at all.
No, I mean, I don't think it was the greatest film of all time, but it was a great summer popcorn flick.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's kind of funny, but a lot of times people just have a hate on for a certain actor. You know, a certain actor makes it big for a long time, and then people just want him to fail. And I think that Tom Cruise might be one of those actors that a lot of people just do not like.
It's true. I think half my Facebook friends can't even stand him, period, and refuse to watch anything that he's in.
I mean, a lot of it can be related to, you know, what his religion is and, you know, his crazy antics on Oprah and things like that. And some people just absolutely cannot stand him. And, you know, it's a shame because I personally think he's a talented actor. I've liked a lot of his movies that he's been in.
I mean, one of your favorite films of his is going to be Interview with a Vampire because you think he's a great Lestat.
Yeah, I mean, I think Interview with a Vampire is probably one of the better vampire movies that I've seen, and it actually turned me into an Anne Rice fan. So, if it wasn't for Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Yep, agreed. I just don't understand. Like part of the hate on Tom Cruise is about how he kind of took control, you know, of the principal photography and that he was making it all about him and this and that. I didn't get that in the film. It wasn't completely all about him.
No, I mean, his character, I mean, obviously he's one of the stars of the movie, so it's an important character, but it wasn't the focus of the movie. In fact, I would say the focus of the movie was more the woman than it was him. And also, of course, the mummy.
Yeah, exactly.
They have that secret society that are handling all the different monsters, the quote-unquote dark universe for Universal, right? So, I mean, this was kind of like the first foray into the dark universe, if you don't count Dracula Untold. The way that it's going to work is Dr. Jekyll is going to be kind of like the Nick Fury of the dark universe, where you're always going to see him in like every single one of these monster movies.
Yeah, exactly. It was really cool when they were touring the that organization's facilities, and you saw little hints of upcoming monsters.
That and a few throwbacks to the original series, right?
Yes. You get to see the Book of the Dead from the original Brendan Fraser mummy movie.
Yep. And I heard that Brendan Fraser did a cameo somewhere in the movie, but as kind of like, you know, henchman number three or something like that. But I don't know which one he was, so.
I totally missed that. We'll have to see it again, because this movie will be a Blu-ray buy for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody loves the Brendan Fraser mummy movies. I think this movie was a million times superior to the last mummy movie that Brendan Fraser was in, the Dragon Tattoo, or whatever the hell the movie was called.
Yeah, well, think of it this way. The first Brendan Fraser mummy movie, it wasn't really meant to be a horror film. It was an adventure film.
Right.
And with a lot of action and maybe a little bit of spookiness thrown in.
Right.
This film, on the other hand, I believe was more true.
This was a horror movie, yeah.
Yeah, it was a horror film. It was darker. The mummy herself was a lot creepier.
And hot when she, you know, finally got all her skin and everything.
Yeah, okay, so she was hot for you. Anyway, but I found this movie more true to the whole, the mummy's supposed to be a horror film.
Yes. And I don't know, I mean, it's like I said, I kind of think that the problem is that everybody has this hate for Tom Cruise, and I just don't understand it. I think it's an irrational kind of thing, and for me, it's just kind of, I don't know.
I know what you mean. It's like, if you hate the person, But watch the movies anyway. I mean, what does one have to do with the other? If you dislike the person, that's going to keep you from, you know, watching anything that person ever does. I mean, he's still a great actor. Yeah, so for the Tom Cruise haters, you're just missing out.
And you know what's really sad is I think Johnny Depp is starting to get a little bit of that now because Johnny Depp was the hottest thing and everybody loved Johnny. And I think now Johnny's kind of getting that Tom Cruise treatment where people hate everything he's in now. Like, how many people complained about Johnny being in Fantastic Beasts? You know, I mean, it was like there was this huge uproar about it.
Yeah, it's like, at the end of the day, Johnny Depp is a fantastic actor.
And so is Tom Cruise. And I honestly think that, you know, Tom Cruise did a great job in this movie. I enjoyed his portrayal in this movie.
I thought it was fantastic.
So, let's go ahead and rate this thing. What would you rate The Mummy?
I'll rate it an 8. It's not the greatest film I've ever seen, but it was still highly entertaining. Like you said, we went in with low expectations, so I was pleasantly surprised on how much I enjoyed it. And I would like to add it to our Blu-ray collection, because it's a good action, you know, popcorn flick.
Mm-hmm. And so, I'm kind of right with you on that. I think I'm also going to give it an 8, just because of that. If you detach yourself from expecting it to be, you know, like Citizen Kane or something, it's not that. It's a summer popcorn flick. I mean, is it any worse than Transformers or any of these other...
Well, it's definitely not worse than Transformers.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah, this is going to be a fun movie to watch again and again and again. And because it was a lot of action, there was a lot of scariness.
And I love how it ties into the Brendan Fraser mummies.
And it was fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie. I don't know.
Well, if you watched the film, you know what? We'd like to know your opinion if you liked it or not. So, you know, once this episode's posted, you know, comment on the post. Let us know if you liked it or not.
Yep. And coming up next, we're going to talk Doctor Who!
Wee-oo.
With Dr. Scott Vigay, who's joining us for the segment once again.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah, thank you for that. What the heck was that?
When one speaks of the perfect symmetry between science fiction, fantasy, and horror podcasting, with a special emphasis on Doctor Who, one should become a connoisseur of Transmissions from Atlantis, featuring JC and Rita Della Torre. While both will have a passionate and vigorous argument on the subject of the day, they do so with the utmost respect.
What? That wasn't Stoopy.
You're Stoopy.
You're Stoopy.
You're Stoopy. Stoopy.
And dignity.
Commander Riker here. I'm by the book. Yeah.
Prime Directive, can I get?
Prime Directive. Geeky.
Join Transmissions from Atlantis weekly at transmissionsfromatlantis.com and part of the ESO Network. Yes. It's quite good, really.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Where is the Doctor now?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Is that credible?
It's true.
You're the woman he loves.
No, I'm not.
She's lying.
The Doctor does not and has never loved me. I'm not lying.
Confirmed. The life form is not lying.
Impossible. This is a trick.
No, it isn't.
My information is correct. You are the woman who loves the Doctor.
Yes, I am. I've never denied it. But whoever said he loved me back? He's the Doctor. He doesn't go around falling in love with people. And if you think he's anything that small or that ordinary, then you haven't the first idea of what you're dealing with.
Your Majesty, I assure you, she is the perfect bait. When this woman is in danger, the Doctor will always come.
Oh, you are a moron. No, he won't.
He's probably already here.
No, he isn't. Of course he isn't.
Possibly on this ship.
Well, go on. Scan it, then. Go on, why don't you?
River.
Two hearts, stupid clothes. You can't miss him.
River.
Go on, scan the whole parsec. He's not here.
God knows where he is right now, but I promise you, he's doing whatever the hell he wants and not giving a damn about me! And I'm just fine with that! When you love the Doctor, it's like loving the stars themselves. You don't expect a sunset to admire you back. And if I happen to find myself in danger, let me tell you, the Doctor is not stupid enough or sentimental enough, and he is certainly not in love enough to find himself standing in it with me!
Alright folks, you know that music, and joining us now is Dr. Scott V. Gay for our Doctor Who segment.
Yay!
Did I steal
Hello,
your
everyone.
Line? Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
It's going to be one of those episodes.
Oh yeah. Boy, here we go. Alright, so we had a very big Doctor Who episode this week, and alright, I have to admit,
Oh, just spit it out.
Wrong.
I might not have been entirely accurate.
You were wrong.
Wrong.
Okay, so it wasn't a three-parter then, okay?
Nope.
All right, fine.
Wrong.
I was...
Oh, just say it.
Wrong.
You know what I was. Anyway. Anywho, so The Eaters of the Light has nothing to do with the last two episodes of the season. It is its own standalone episode, but it was an interesting episode. What did you think of it, Scott?
I loved it. I thought it was great as a quasi-historical. It was really kind of cool. I mean, my first impressions were, boy, people in Britain really learn about the Romans a lot. you know, what is it with young British women and being fans of the Romans?
Hmm.
maybe this was an idea that was carried over when Amy was still around. That would have made a little bit more sense. But, I thought that it was really well established, and I thought that it was great that Bill figured out the translation parts without being told what it was.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. Nobody had to tell her. Yeah, the TARDIS translation.
In fact, that was my favorite part of the whole episode. How she's figuring out how everyone's either speaking Latin or Celtic, but everybody's understanding each other because of the TARDIS's psychic field.
And not only just the TARDIS, but the Doctor himself. Because if the Doctor's not there, then the TARDIS doesn't do what it's supposed to do. I mean, we got that established with David Tennant in season two in the first episode.
That's right, in the Christmas invasion.
Right, and Bill figured that out. She said it's the TARDIS or the Doctor or the two of them.
Yep.
And she was right. And so I loved that. I loved the two cultures, how they interacted. I thought that was great. I thought it was really cool that the one Roman was called Grandpa because he was, what, 18? You know what I mean?
Yep.
It was like the oldest one, right? I thought that was really good. And a big shout out to Nardole. For going native.
Yes.
I mean, you know, his scenes were fantastic.
Nardole's character is great, man.
I love his character.
I know Bill's not supposed to be around for the next season, but I really hope they carry over Nardole to the next season.
I think that unfortunately we're going to probably get a clean slate, but I'm right there with you. If they could bring over anyone, if they could keep anybody, it would be Nardole, at least for the first couple episodes of the next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I love, and I also love the fact that the crows speak even today.
Yes,
that was great.
Yes, take the word of the person's name, you know, through all time, Ka. And it happens to be Ka.
Right. They're not upset, they're remembering. Yes. I love that. That yes. was great. That was...
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat.
So the interesting thing about this episode was this was written by one of the classic writers of Doctor Who, one of the classic Who writers, the person that wrote the actual last episode of Classic Who.
Ooh, Survival.
Yes, exactly. The writer's name, Rona Monroe, she was the writer of Survival. So that's kind of cool. And I kind of like the monster that she invented. It was a unique kind of monster that isn't native to Doctor Who.
Yeah, no. So what is it? Like a transdimensional kind of being that just exists in another dimension?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, some sort of locust, right? I mean, I loved how it looked creepy. And, you know, now that you mentioned that she wrote Survival, I could see Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred in this.
Yes.
You know, and like you say, it wasn't, it was a chance to create a new monster, and I don't know if it's going to be as iconic as the Weeping Angels, but it definitely stands out in my mind as a really good monster.
I think it's one of the better monsters of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. So the whole point about the music... So towards the end of the episode, and we see the little girl walking around the mound, and you're hearing the music. The music is coming from that dimensional portal because those people are still alive inside that dimensional portal playing music.
Yeah, because they established that time runs at a different rate.
Yeah,
in the portal.
Right. So they sacrificed themselves. The Ninth Legion there sacrificed themselves to defend the world. Really. And I love how the Doctor said, you know, they were never missing. They were always there. You know, that was kind of cool. And I have to say that, you know, this is yet another example of the Doctor's desire to sacrifice himself. You know, he's pretty quick at the drop of a hat to be willing to do that.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time that Bill's had to, like, you know, stop him and say, no, that's somebody else's fate.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Why do you think Capaldi's doctor is so willing to give himself up?
Unless he's already regenerating.
I think he knows. You know what I mean? Even if he doesn't know, I think he knows. And I think maybe, you know, every doctor goes through an evolution, you know, during their time. You can almost watch it by the length of their hair.
Right.
You know, think about it. Capaldi now has the wild Matt Smith hair.
Yeah.
You know, from if you look at what he did from the day he regenerated to now, it's almost like, it's getting too wild. You're about to regenerate.
Yeah.
you know, and... I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, for this persona who is so gruff and just angry, or at least caustic, he has really kind of, I guess, grown into the role of the universe's policeman. Yes. I think so.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
Another interesting thing I enjoyed about this episode was their openness with sexuality. Like for example, when Bill is in that cave with the other Ninth Legion Romans, and some of them are starting to flirt with her, and she's like, "Dudes, you know, I don't."
Yeah, I prefer women.
Yeah, I prefer women, and then one of them was like, "Well, I prefer both."
He said, "Well, that's okay. What's his face prefers men, you know?"
Yeah, and one of them ended up being bisexual. Yeah. But if I remember correctly. In Roman times, they were a lot more open about sexuality.
Yeah, they didn't care. It was Rome. Yeah.
it was very accurate to the time period, and it was kind of a cool way to do that. And my favorite line of that whole thing was, "I think it's cute that you're being so restricted."
Yes.
Right? I mean, what a wonderful way to kind of twist that on its ear.
Yeah.
Because
what a Roman way to think of that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I kind of like the whole idea of taking the legend of the Ninth Legion and, you know, doing something different with it. I mean, who's to say that they aren't in some kind of interdimensional thing? Who knows?
It could happen. You don't know.
You don't know.
And it's one of those things where it's not an obvious legend. It's not like Roanoke or something like that that
right.
the more people would be familiar with. You know, the fact that it actually is based on an idea that, yes, the Ninth Legion did go missing, well, that's great. I mean, I think that's always where the best stories come from.
So do you know of any actual historical thing about the Ninth Legion? I read a little bit about them after the episode just to find out what the current thinking of archaeology is on it. And it seems like there's been traces of the Ninth Legion all the way up to some of the other battles that that at least parts of the Ninth Legion survived Britain.
Yeah, I think the idea here is that, you know, maybe a handful, like in the episode itself, a handful survived, and then they were kind of cut off. There wasn't mm-hmm. really an easy way to you know, get back home, so they might as well just continue doing what they're doing where they were and move on, right. you know, and kind of mix. That's the understanding I have, too. And to be honest, really, I hadn't studied up on them or anything like that. I mean, right. I was familiar with it, at least in name, when this episode came, so I could appreciate that. And then I did what you did, which was get on the internet and go, yep. Hey, what is this?
What is the story? Yeah.
Makes you wonder if the Ninth Legion was maybe just scattered and they were just assimilated into other legions.
Could be.
Very well could be. I mean, that's the thing about assimilation is that it happens all the time. If you think about the era in which they existed, every day was a battle for survival. So you didn't go, oh well, I have to get back to my home port. You know, the fact that you were so far away in itself was a kind of a one way mission.
Yeah.
And if you were so slaughtered by whatever happened to them, you probably weren't in the best of shape to make any long journey. So you probably assimilated or melded with or, you know, just kind of tried to survive where you were.
Yep, exactly. All right, so let's go ahead and rate this episode. I'm going to give it I'll give it a 9 because I really enjoyed the episode. I thought the creature was sufficiently scary. I thought the interplay between Bill and the Romans was cool. I thought the Doctor was great, as he always is, and Nardal was funny. I thought it was a very solid episode. I enjoyed it. What about you, Rita?
I'm probably going to give it an 8. I mean, I love the episode.
You are a tough grader, I swear.
It was great. I mean, like, for example, The Empress of Mars, I enjoyed a lot more.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay. So that's the only reason why I'd give this one an 8. I mean, I loved it, but I still found, like, Empress of Mars more entertaining.
Okay. What about you, Scott?
Well, I think Rita, I'm right there with Rita about how Empress of Mars was probably more entertaining, but I'm going to give it a 9 because of Missy at the end.
Yes.
That is what really, for me, made it get to a 9 level, because it was a super solid episode all around. There's nothing really to nitpick at, and really, you know, that it was a really well done. But the character development of Missy in the end of the episode,
mm-hmm.
holy, what is going on there?
Yeah.
That is great.
And it sets up the next, the swan song of Stephen Moffat as the showrunner of Doctor Who, because he's writing the next 3 episodes, which includes the Christmas special. We've got a 2-parter coming up, and this 2-parter is the length of a feature film. So really, if you think about it, we're getting a feature film just broken up into 2 parts.
And the last episode is going to be
an hour,
a full hour. It's
yeah,
not just going to be the 40 something minutes that it typically is.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying, is that combined it's an hour and 45 minutes, which is the length of your typical feature film.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's master centric.
Yep.
You know, the part that was great was when the Doctor said it might mean that we could be friends again.
Yes.
And just that interplay between the two of them and what that might mean for them, as because the Doctor and the Master have always been friends. I don't know
yes.
what you would, and even when they were at the most at odds, there was always this sort of respect for one another at all times. And I think that goes back to Roger Delgado's performance and the relationship he had with the Third Doctor and all that sort of stuff. And I think that everyone who's played the Master since then has played it to where there is this underlining kinship with the Doctor, whether or not they were brothers or relatives or just, you know, Gallifreyans.
Or grew up maybe as best friends or something.
Or grew up as best friends. I mean, if you think about David Tennant, you know, as the 10th Doctor saying, regenerate, you could stay with me, we could go, you know, tour the universe together, just live. When he's pleading with a master who has done all these things, you know, he's still so willing to let it be forgiven, that there's definitely a story there. And for whatever is going on with Missy and possibly truly being reformed, I wonder what that's going to mean for all the other past masters. You know what I mean? And what does this mean for the future of the master?
Right.
It's so cool. And it was a quiet little scene at the end of the episode. You know, just when you think it's all over, there's this extra little bit off in the TARDIS, and the Doctor and Missy are having this quiet moment where, and it was so well done.
And I think the interesting thing is also, if you've seen some of the promo pictures for the coming episodes, not only are we getting the Mondo Cybermen, but each flavor of Cybermen, at least in the New Who world, are going to be represented, including these... The
Cybus Cybermen?
Cybus Cybermen and the newer, whatever they are, Cybermen.
The faster than a speeding bullet Cybermen, yeah.
Yes. And not only that, if you've seen pictures of John Sim, he's sporting a master goatee, and he's dressed in all master black.
And not to mention holding the same laser sonic screwdriver that he did.
Yep, from his past one. So,
yep.
So yeah, it's he's setting up as a classic Doctor.
As a classic master. Yeah, with the goatee and the it's not quite the Nehru jacket, but it's close.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close. Yes.
Yeah, it would go perfect. You know.
So I'm actually really excited about these this two-parter. It's going to be really interesting. And hopefully it's going to be something that will wrap up the series with some good ratings, because unfortunately this has been a very bad ratings year for Doctor Who.
Really? Why?
I'm not sure, but the ratings have been lower than any point since the first season.
They were high at the beginning of the season, but it's been steadily dropping since.
Yes, for example, the overnight for Eaters of Light was only 2.89.
Oh, there's something wrong there. I don't understand it. This is, with the exception of the Monk trilogy, with the exception of them, I have loved almost every episode this entire season. I cannot say that of the Peter Capaldi era.
Yeah,
really, this has been solid. Good Doctor Who with lots of fun and a lot of new stuff that works really well. I hope that this doesn't mean that people gave up on it and didn't see this season.
And are just waiting until Capaldi's gone. But I gotta say, this is, like I said, it's one of the lowest rated seasons of Doctor Who since the reboot occurred. By comparison, Matt's last season, there wasn't a single episode that was under 7 million on the overnight. So it's had a significant drop.
So the Doctor's going to be 12,
yeah.
And he's going to be, and there's going to be a cute girl who's going to love him that's going to follow around. Oh my God.
Yep, so they're going to go back to the Tennant model, and that's basically what's going to happen. And speaking of, let's talk a little bit about what Chris Chibnall plans on doing with Doctor Who, because we all saw the article that came out this past week. about how he is going to do something a little bit different with Doctor Who, and that he's going to approach it kind of like he approached Broadchurch, where it's a season-long story, and not in the sense of, you know, like there's little bits of the story along the line, but it's going to be a serial where each episode builds on the last episode.
Well, you know, why not? You got to tell it a little bit differently. Each time, put your own stamp on it, I suppose. And as long as, you know, there aren't going to be anyone playing around with that in the sense that they're going to question it and maybe, you know, try to get him to not do parts 2, 3, and 4, because, you know, shows like Babylon 5 had a 5-year arc as well, mm-hmm. and then they didn't think that they were going to get a 5th season, so they did everything that they were going to do in their 4th season, and then when they got their 5th, they didn't know what to do.
Right.
So I hope with Doctor Who that if he sets out on this path and really maps it out and says, for the next 5 years, this is where I'm building to,
yep.
I hope he's allowed to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be interesting, I think, because I don't think Doctor Who has been portrayed that way since maybe the origins of Doctor Who, when they used to have the big 10 and 12 part story arcs, but those mm-hmm. were episodes that were only like 25 minutes in length. So,
right.
I think the last time they did one with a 40 minutes in length episode was maybe The Trial of the Time Lord, right?
Well, yeah, it was The Trial of Time Lord, or the season before that was a series of, like, 3 45-minute episodes, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the Third Doctor was all, like, 22-minute episodes, but they were, like, 7 parts to each story.
Right, exactly.
You know, it ran for a month, you know, or more, you know?
So, it's going to be real interesting to see how that plays to a modern audience.
Yeah, will they stick around?
Well, maybe. Well, if you think about it, they kind of have to, because if they watch the pilot and they got to keep watching it to see what happens next, it may be a great idea to kind of rejuvenate the ratings in Doctor Who.
Yeah. It might be, or are they going to be told, oh, now it's not accessible because if you missed that episode, you can't come in episode 3.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. We'll see how that all works out. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Transmissions from Atlantis. I want to thank Dr. Scott for joining us again for the Doctor Who segment.
Oh, it's my honor, guys.
Yeah, Scott, we love having you as always. And coming up next week, of course, we're going to talk about part 1 of the big 2-parter in Doctor Who. Any big movies coming out this week?
Despicable Me 3.
That's this week?
Ooh. Is that this week?
I think that's next week.
Is it? So what's coming out this week?
I don't know anything good's coming out this week. So
something's supposed to be coming out this
week.
So
we may not be doing a movie this weekend. I'm not sure. So we'll have to see. But hopefully we'll come up with something to watch. Of course, we'll continue our reviews of Twin Peaks, and we'll get caught up on American Gods and all that other good stuff. So until then, next time we'll say...
Elonzi.
Elonzi. Goodbye, everybody.
Elonzi. I should say Elonzi more often. Elonzi. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Elonzi. And then it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say Alonzi, Alonzo, every time.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abodes to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.